Okay, we're now going to camera roll 115, 115. Our next take could be take 4, and we're continuing the interview with Bill Grammy.
This is take 4. Marker.
Mr. Grammy, the last time we talked over these events, you told me that you thought that without the pressure from Caesar and the farm workers, the Teamsters wouldn't have met such a receptive response from the growers. Do you think that's true? Or, I know you said it before, but let's talk about that.
Yes, I think that without the pressure that Chavez was applying, that the Teamsters would have found it much more difficult to move in many of the industry, not in all of them. Because in some, like the row crops, lettuce, etc., the Teamsters had a lot of power to exert through the drivers, etc., and having the sheds, the processing plant. But in others, like grapes, for example, the Teamsters had minimal power, and consequently, we wouldn't have had the pressure to exert there.
When the dust had settled from 73, you had a whole bunch of new contracts, and actually the farm workers had very few. Was that a sort of a stopping place for the Teamsters, or did you have other plans to expand in the fields at that point?
No, we had other plans to go on. Primarily to complete the organization.
Start over and say primarily we wanted to.
Primarily, we wanted to complete the organization that we had started. And normally what you organize leads you to necessarily organize something else that competes with it, for example. And so consequently, in order to maintain your agreements, you have to organize the unorganized in all industries, and farm labor is no exception to that.
So if you were moving ahead, and that was working fine, but there was also another factor that entered, a political factor, which I think politics has played a big role in farm labor.
Yes.
In 1974, Jerry Brown was elected. He was a friend of Caesar's and the farm workers. And from 74 on, you saw people in Sacramento thinking about a law. How did the Teamsters feel about that?
Well, I testified before Congress, the United States Congress, I testified in favor of bringing all of agricultural labor under the NLRA at that time, and with special considerations for the rapidity in which the process moved as opposed to other stationary sort of industrial complexes. So consequently, we were in favor of it.
But that was on the national level. How did you respond to the issue of a law here in California?
We were in favor of it, depending on what the law was, just so it accounted for the peculiarities of the industry.
Were the Teamsters able to play any significant role in the negotiations that led to the law? Did you have any say in writing the language or anything?
No. Not we had.
Again, I need a complete sentence.
We weren't able to exert any unusual pressure. We did have legislative representatives there, and we did.
You want to? Do you need an answer? Let's cut. You need an answer. Though.
Yeah. Let me see who it is. The only.
Take 5, Marker.
Couple more comments, just quick things. We don't have to go into these at great length. The campaign in 73 cost the Teamsters roughly $3 million, and part of it was what you two talked about as a social service program. What was that, and why was it important?
Yes. I started that right at the beginning, realizing that the farm laborers...
I need to know what you're talking about.
I started the social service program right at the onset of that big drive, because I realized that many of the problems that the farm laborers had could not be answered by the collective bargaining agreement. And so I hired initially five bona fide social service workers that had had extensive experience working with groups similar to the farm workers. And eventually had a crew of approximately 24 people, representatives, all certified in their field to handle social services. They were all social service workers, and put them throughout the organization so that we had a...
Just jump in, because the issue here is interesting, because normally when you organize people, you don't think you have to provide social services. Why would farm workers need this?
Well, farm workers had a variety of problems. I should say some farm workers have a variety of problems. One being that a lot of them are from another country. They're from Mexico. They still have families in Mexico and so forth. Also, they have a language problem, that they don't understand the availability of services or how to access those services in this country. And consequently, we had a rule, for example, among our representatives. If the farm laborer has a problem that isn't answered by the contract, you refer them to social service. You don't tell them we can't help you. You refer them to the social service. They'll decide if there's another way to help them. And so consequently, we found that was the strongest part of our program. And that.
Yeah. Now, there was one other controversial aspect of the 73 campaign. I've never heard the Teamsters discuss what happened, but whether it was to protect workers or to intimidate workers, there were news pictures, there were reports about bringing in a bunch of really tough-looking guys on the picket line in 73. Who were those people and why were they there?
Which area are we?
Coachella and Delano.
Coachella. Number one, I wasn't, I was, the only time I went down the area, I got shot.
Oh.
And so my first day there to look at what was happening, I was shot. And so consequently, if you stepped as I did into that situation to get a look-see, you'd have seen that there was a lot of activity. For example, my first view of what was going on, I went to a camp where people were supposed to...
We just
went out of business?
Well, we're slightly. I would imagine we tripped a circuit breaker. Do we have too much I want? These are not very...
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Grummy.
Okay, that was take five. The light just died. Now we're going to take six. And hopefully everything's queued up.
Okay, this is take six. Marker.
Okay, so 1973, there was a pretty violent atmosphere. You get out on the picket line, you get shot. And also the Teamsters are bringing in some guys who are on the picket line who look really menacing. Who are these guys?
What happened was the farm workers started a new tactic where we would sign a grower, for example, a grape grower in a particular area. The people generally were housed in some housing complex in that area in Coachella. And what they started doing was they would bring old cars, for example, into the streets in those areas, and a group of chanting people with the red bandanas and red flags light the cars on fire when the workers were supposed to move out of the housing complex and be transported to the fields. So, I had advised all of the area supervisors in the various areas that when that happened to escort the workers out of those areas, because it was like being in the middle of a war zone. It looked like Los Angeles after the Rodney King thing. You'd move into that area, as I did, to take a look-see for myself, and got shot. The first morning I was shot in the head. And cars were on fire on both sides of the street. People were chanting and yelling Huelga, waving red flags, red and black flags. There was smoke and fire in all directions. And here the poor farm workers trying to move from the housing complex out to the field. So we made certain that they had escorts to move through those areas in.
But who were those people?
Those were lettuce truck drivers. They were various people like that, that were acquaintances of the organizers who were in the field. And they were brought in to augment our organizing crews.
Now, when people talk about the farm workers, they talk about a lot of internal difficulties and disagreements. I'm wondering, when you look at how smooth the Teamsters effort was, whether internal discussions were maybe, I mean, for example, you would talk things over with someone like Einar Mohn or someone who's the head of the conference. Was there a unanimous vision on how to proceed?
We had continual discussions. The matter as to how to proceed was pretty much left to whoever was in charge of the operation. We consulted like all organizations consult between various individuals, but primarily they were relying on those who were in charge of the particular area.
Well, but I'm thinking about one situation, and this goes back to Salinas in 70, where publicly at least there seemed to be a disagreement with you and Einar Mohn about letting growers out of their contracts.
Yes, yes there was. It wasn't apparent, it was a real disagreement between us.
And what was the disagreement?
Well, the disagreement was simply that the Teamsters had a history of living by their agreements. That's one reason that many employers preferred them over other organizations. And once you sign an agreement, that's what you live by for its term. And so consequently...
We're going to stop and change. I mean, I had the impression that you wanted to hold the agreement.
Yeah. Okay, that was take six, and that was the end of camera roll 115, going to camera roll 116 now, and our next take will be take seven.
This is take seven, Ben?
Now, we were talking about occasionally there'd be internal disagreements in the Teamsters. Before, when we were talking, you told me that even though the organizing campaign in 73 was successful, that Einar Mohn wanted to back off because of image problems in 74.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well, primarily, that was the day where liberal political viewpoints were in vogue. And you had the Kennedys and so forth and so on that saw in Cesar Chavez advocate of the individual rights of farm workers, for example, and so forth, and they were in vogue. And so consequently, the pressure on the Teamsters became fantastic, particularly that of the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church, in my view, had, having been a civil libertarian myself in the 50s, and I hadn't seen them anyplace. I was the guy that was on the NAACP board fighting my own members and to advocate and walking the picket lines for NAACP, and I didn't see any Catholic priests around. Well, they had missed that whole phase of the civil rights movement, and they weren't going to miss this new Chicano movement that was occurring, and so they jumped in. The Mahonies and so forth jumped in to get their place on the placard. So anyway, the pressure that they bought was fantastic, and I realized it. And so consequently, it was that pressure that the Teamsters of Mohn's persuasion became particularly concerned about and thought we should withdraw from the farm labor situation. I disagreed because our reasons for getting in were still valid, and that is to protect what we had and expand it in the food processing industry and to complete the organization we had started in the farm labor. And I felt we could do it much better than Chavez, and we were much more sophisticated in contract administration and so forth. We had completely supplanted the sociological benefits to the farm worker that he was doing ad hoc. We were doing it with professional social service workers, and I felt that that's where our impetus should be, to help the quote-unquote Latin American and Filipino and whatever else groups were in the farm labor situation. So I felt we could do both things, that we could organize and also advance the social aspects for the people through a much more sophisticated representation system than Chavez had.
Well, but, you know, everything has both sides, and in fact, the Teamsters did get out of the fields. I think that there was an agreement signed between Fitzsimmons and Chavez in 79. But yet you were just telling me at some point you were contacted by Teamster leadership and asked your advice about whether you should go back in again. At this point you said no. What were your reasons for that?
Well, my reasons were...
Again, I need a complete sense. My reasons for advising the Teamsters...
Yeah, my reasons for advising the Teamsters at that time, Fitzsimmons had died, and Presser became the general president of the Teamsters. And they asked, a series of meetings took place between Chavez and Jess Carr. At that time, I was the executive assistant to the Western Conference director. I'd moved up in position in the organization. And I had, after a series of meetings had taken place, and they then asked me to help formulate a policy. I had advised, number one, against making an agreement with Chavez, coming to an agreement with him, a formal agreement with him, and to advocating our reentrance into the farm labor program. And the reason I did is...
I'm not clear. Did you suggest getting back in or staying out?
I suggested a method to get back in if they were serious about getting back in. But I told them that I thought it would be a wasted effort and a waste of time. In fact, my words to Presser was, they took place in a hotel at Las Vegas where we were having a meeting. If you are going to commit, as he had indicated, I'll commit whatever is necessary. And I said, if you took that $5 million or $9 million and put it in the middle of this floor here and lit it, at least we'd get some heat out of it. You know, we'd get a little warmth maybe. But I think that's exactly what you'll be doing if you go into the farm labor thing at this point.
You spent, as you said, 38 years in the labor movement, and you put a lot of that time, a lot of it was devoted to farm labor and organizing farm workers. So looking back over the whole period, you worked a lot at it. Someone like Cesar Chavez gave his whole life to it. What do you think was accomplished by all that?
Well, I think that as far as farm labor was the only accomplishment, the only real accomplishment that resulted was a temporary one during the period of time primarily that we were both in the field. It enhanced the farm laborer himself in his bargaining power, and he took advantage of it. He negotiated some deals even better than the ones that we were negotiating. And also it enhanced possibly his position socially and by bettering his economic status primarily, and also drawing the attention of the country to the plight of farm workers, matters of the pesticides, et cetera, and so forth. But as I advised Presser not to get back into it at that late date, the reason I advised him is I thought we would be, that we would not be successful in accomplishing what we had set out to do because we had stopped and started too many times. And that no one would believe us, that we were serious and that we intended to be there to stay, because we had said that twice before, or three times before, and we had withdrawn for one reason.
Do you think that if, say, the United Farm Workers tried to seriously get back in, do you think they would face the same credibility problem?
I don't think they could succeed for different reasons.
I don't think the United Farm Workers.
I don't think the United Farm Workers could get back in to organizing in farm labor today without a great deal of difficulty being successful for a variety of reasons. The first reason is the nature of the industry itself. You can't organize a little bit of the agricultural industry. You have to go after it in a large-scale way to organize it. And secondly, you can't scare to death the industry that you're trying to organize. You have to have a philosophy that though they may not like, they will not at least be frightened by. The philosophy that the farm workers had that contributed to almost all of their difficulty with employers was not the fact the employer didn't want to be organized alone, which is a deterrent in itself, but the fact that they didn't want him to organize them because of his philosophy. And that was what I had referred to initially as his philosophy based on the Alinsky School of Social Revolution, which essentially does not allow anything to become static. So employers are interested in stability in the workforce. They're used to wrestling when the agreement is open or when an agreement opens, wrestling for the best advantage they can get. The union, on the other hand, is interested in advancing the workers' situation as best they can. But once that's done, then the employer expects to have 1, 2, 3 years, whatever the term of the agreement is, of stability. And disputes are resolved by arbitration normally, so there's no disruption of the work process. On the other hand, Chavez's philosophy was that if it's worth a fight, it's worth wrestling for, and we want to be free to wrestle. So if you have a 3-year agreement, that only doesn't mean anything. We want to be able to make another demand during the term of the agreement and another demand tomorrow after that is acceded to, and this process continues. The instability that results from a business standpoint is one that the employer doesn't want and will do anything he can to avoid it. So until that organization moves more to a more traditional philosophy, they will have that as the greatest problem to organizing. And
A lot of people sort of made the claim or made the observation that it wasn't a union, it was a movement.
Yes.
What do you think it was?
Yes. It was a movement
Farm
Workers Union was a movement that had evolved into a union but hadn't lost its movement characteristics. And so consequently, it didn't lend toward a stable industrial situation. It lended toward a perpetual wrestling match between the employer and the union.
We've run out of film, but I need one more answer because I think it's sort of looking to the future.
Okay, that's
at one point you advised the pressure not to get back in. Can you envision a set of circumstances where it would make sense for the Teamsters to go back in and try and fill in those gaps and somehow say we're going to be here for good? And does that make sense at some point? All the other canneries, all those other factors are still in place.
Yeah, but if I didn't know the Teamsters now, I would say it could be. But right now, the Teamsters have such an internal struggle that takes precedence over any other consideration. But
so I guess it would have to have a fairly high priority. It would have to have some real commitment to it, right?
Yeah. You see, if you knew the history of the Teamsters, which I'm sure you do, but the Teamster truck driver resisted like hell the warehousemen ever coming into the Teamsters, the dock guys, the guys that loaded the freight onto the truck. Oh, we don't, you know, I mean, they're not like us, we are drivers, and these bastards just push, hand trucks around. And they resisted like a son of a bitch. So finally, somebody got it across to them that they were part of the crew, and you should have them So, okay, so that, then they came in, but not those bastards inside the warehouse.
Yeah.
See? And somebody said, well, wait a minute, you know, if you have the warehouse and you have the dock and you have the truck, you've got more power, you know? No way, you know, those are warehousemen, you know? So anyway, there's that, you know, that's what
it's
you're
sort of,
fighting.
It's sort of the mindset between a craft unit and an industrial.
That's right, economic. That's right. And so...
And the Teamsters, I mean, certain people in the Teamsters have a vision of an industrial
economy. Yeah. Now move that to food processing, and you're, it's even more remote. So... you know, to tell this guy that's driving UPS truck or this or that that we shouldn't get involved in farm labor is like telling you that I think it, you know, you should be out there fishing off of that thing for a living. Just walk that wall and catch as many little fish as you can. You know, it's so foreign from what they're thinking and doing and their life experience that it's a problem. We had a moment when we could have succeeded. And farm labor today would have not been what you see out there. It had been 90% mechanized. Instead of the 365,000 farm laborers in California and about another 80,000 that are permanent people that work on farms, you'd have probably been down to, at peak, maybe 200,000. An average crew of more like maybe 150 to 125,000 with that other 80,000 that's back there. But it would have been a job worth doing. It's one that you and I could have learned to do and without breaking our necks out there. So the tomato machines were coming in all covered and air conditioned out in the fields, you know, and so forth. And much of the process also, they had figured out ways to eliminate the hoeing of the weeds, you know, and so forth, by just the way they planted. And so that everything was being done in plastic, you know, the seed is there, the herbicide is there, everything is there. We roll that out, and there's no weeding to be done. Only the lettuce comes through, or whatever you're
so
planting.
So that was sort of this moment when things could have...
That's the moment. You know, there's moments in history when you can get something done, and then there's moments when you can't do anything. But we had everything. We had the food processing, and I had organized the last area that was unorganized in California for Vastapool, all the apple industry. I organized that. And 22 plants, it took me 22 months and an 8-month strike. But I got that organized. That was all the canneries, all the dehydrators, all the packing sheds in Sevastopol. That was the last big area. And I did that in 1954, 55, and 56. And so consequently, everything was organized in California. The contracts were at their best. The packing sheds were all organized. And now was the time, as this product moved into the field, to just follow it, organize it, bring it under contract, expand those contracts further, force that automation that would have made them decent jobs for people instead of a killing job, and so forth. So that was the time. That was my disagreement with Mohn. Now's the time. Tomorrow may not be the same. And we had 271 employers under contract. I had 90 organizers in the field, 5 offices. I had 5 area supervisors. I had 5 social service programs, all coordinated, all moving at the same time. And we ran, you know, we ran away from it. And with it, Chavez failed. So we weren't helping Chavez by getting out, because he failed. You know, and the employers, Andy Church, the last conversation I had with him, I went down as arbitrator. I don't know why in the hell he ever accepted me as an arbitrator in basic vegetable. And went down there and I had a talk with him and I said, what about this new act in California? He said, that's a joke. We can tie them up. They win an election. I never see a contract. It's a joke. I said, I thought so, you know.
He's right.
Yeah. And, so anyway, so there was a moment when it could have been done to the glory of the farm labor.
It slipped away.
And it slipped. And it can't be done. I've been advising against it ever since, not for or any other reason, then I think it would fail.
It's not because you don't want it to be done.
Oh, I want it to be done, but it would fail. The pieces aren't there. And to put it together, they're not there. And of course now, liberal is the dirtiest word, you know, in the dictionary politically, you know. So if you're not middle of the road or conservative, you're in the wrong place, you know, at the wrong time. So.
Okay, let's cut that. That's good. Thanks for
that. Can you turn around, please?
Yes, I'm sorry, we have to be quiet for a minute. Now we record silence.
Oh. Okay.
Very quiet, please.
Very mysterious.
This is room tone. Okay, that's the end of room tone, and that's the end of the interview with Bill Grammy.
In general.
Yeah.
I mean, unions are going to mergers to survive.
Yeah.